Welcome to Down There Aware. I'm Alex.
And I'm Mary, Alex's mama. Each week, we sit down to discuss various topics concerning gynecologic cancers and women's health care.
In 2019, at the age of 32, I was diagnosed with uterine cancer and became painfully aware of just how unaware I was of everything down there.
On this podcast, we interview experts, share personal stories, and explore new research. No subject is off limits, so we caution you to listen at your own discretion.
Welcome back to another episode of Down There Aware. We're excited you're joining us today. If you are a first-time listener, thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you so much to our loyal listeners who listen every single week and sometimes listen a second time. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we really appreciate the comments and people who bring up what we've talked about and tell us how it helped them or how it enlightened them.
Mm-hmm. That's or just, you know, how it kind of plays out in your life, your everyday regular life. We would love it if you could rate and subscribe and give us a review. All of those things help the algorithm, that mysterious algorithm, for us to climb to the top of the charts so that more people can hear what we have going on and can just learn a little bit more about being down there aware. On this week's episode, we started thinking about, you know, we often say, well, we researched that, or we found this great article, or we found this, you know, new research or something. And it just got us thinking, how do you research? As a layperson, as someone who is not a doctor, not a medical professional, what steps can you take if you have questions about your health or some symptoms you're having or a diagnosis you've received? And so we thought we would spend a little bit of time giving you some tips and tricks of things that we do that have helped us through the years.
You know, a lot of times a doctor will say to you, it's happened to me several times, and I've heard other people say the same thing. A doctor will say, don't go home and Google that. Mm-hmm. And in fact, just this week, I was talking to a family member, extended family member, about the mutated gene we all have. And she said a couple different times, I Googled this or I Googled that. And she said it in a negative way, like maybe I would judge her for that. And I said, no, look, it's okay to Google things. In fact, we're really fortunate that we can Google things. I mean, I go back to my college years, there was no such thing. And, you know, Alex is looking at me like there were a whole lot of things you didn't have.
Tell us how you registered for college classes again.
Oh, really? I mean, you don't know how easy you've got it right now.
I know. Well, and I grew up in, I am a cusper. I'm kind of a zennial, if you will, between Gen X and millennial, where I remember a time without the internet. And I remember when the internet was new. And so research really even started for me in the card catalog at the library. But now there's so much at your fingertips. And in the world and time of fake news and misinformation and reputable resources, it really, you know, makes you wonder, when I hit search, what am I going to get? And can I trust that information?
Well, and I think that's really the point. We have to be careful. There's nothing wrong with Googling something. Nothing wrong at all. Where it gets sketchy is if you put your complete trust in sites that are not reputable sites. And so that's really what we want to talk a little bit about. I just still marvel at what we have at our fingertips because of the internet. And, you know, now we have it on our phones.
Well, and I just think about the phone you have in your hand is
everything.
Infinitely more powerful than the computer system that sent astronauts to the moon in 1969.
That's
unreal. There's a little bit of my space nerd coming out. But yeah, I mean, we really do have infinite power at our fingertips. One way, and if you know me, you may chuckle when I say this, but one way you can trust a source is if the website ends in .gov. It's really hard to say that with a straight face looking at my mom, but it's true that the government hires really talented and smart, experienced,
reputable
professionals, in places like the National Institute of Health. And so the NIH, if you're looking for medical advice, is a really good place to go because you know that you're going to get accurate information, up-to-date information, and it's not just somebody's opinion or their own personal experience on their blog. It really is scientific, you know, gone through the whole research method with accurate information. So we can talk offline about other aspects of the government, but the NIH is truly a wonderful resource.
And even in using the NIH, you can find other sources through that website because they will cite different studies and different research papers that are published. So that's a great place to start, and then you can kind of spring out from there.
And I think that's a really great first tip is always dig a little deeper. So if you see an article, if you're reading an article, usually at the bottom or maybe linked within the article, you'll find their resources, their sources that they're getting that information from. And you always want to go back to that first person source, as we all are taught in elementary or middle school. And you can always find that. Even if you're going on Wikipedia, if you scroll to the bottom of that page, there are links to academic papers or history books or whatever it might be that you're researching. And so that's, you know, that's another tip. Dig a little deeper, find the sources for the information that you're reading, because if there are no sources, it's likely opinion. And while that might help you feel good because it's a similar experience that you're having, it's not necessarily scientifically factual.
Right. And if you come up with, you find articles, it's important for you to look deeper into where those articles come from, who published them. A good thing to look for is that they are peer-reviewed articles. So it's not just some, you know, Joe Blow writing his opinion about a heart attack or whatever. So it's good to look and understand what is a reputable source and what isn't.
And what is a peer-reviewed article?
Well, peer-reviewed is also sometimes referred to as a scholarly publication. And that just means that the process is for that information to go through a group of people who are experts in that specific field, so that it ensures the academic scientific quality, that it's not just one person putting something out there, but it's whatever they've written is reviewed by a panel of experts.
And did you know that a really great source to find only scholarly or peer-reviewed information is actually Google Scholar?
And there you go. It's okay to Google.
It is okay to Google. So if instead of doing www.google.com, if you do scholar.google.com, you will only search through peer-reviewed articles, journals of medicine, or journals of, I mean, it could really be anything. There are business journals, there are music journals, there are marketing journals and physical therapy, all kinds of academic. If there's a doctorate in that degree, in that field, you can guarantee that there's a journal about it. And so scholar.google.com only shows you those scholarly peer-reviewed articles. So you know you're not just searching the entire internet.
And some will say that there is room for some bias in peer-reviewed articles, and I would tend to agree with that to a certain extent. So, again, you don't want to just put all your eggs in one basket.
Well, and a good example of that is if you read 10 articles about gynecologic cancer, I bet 9, if not 10 of them will say the vast majority of women who get gynecologic cancers are postmenopausal. And we know that that is not necessarily right. accurate. So you also have to look at when were they published? Scholarly articles last for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so if something was published even 5 or 10 years ago, in terms of health and cancer and medicine, that sometimes is behind the times.
Well, and even when we had Dr. Mary Jennifer Markham on, she talked about how just in the last few years, there's been an increase in younger women getting an endometrial or uterine cancer diagnosis. And that's happened just in the last few years. So even if, like Alex said, your article is just 5 years old, it's probably too old in regard to some medicine.
And the important thing to also remember about peer review processes is that it takes time. And so the research takes time. And if there was a study done, that takes time. So from the time of hypothesis all the way through the clinical trial or the study or whatever it may be, all the way through the peer review process, that could be months, if not years.
Yeah.
So the research is already behind even on the day of publication, because as we know, things are moving at lightning speed. So just keep all of that in mind. And I think that's the most important thing to remember when you're doing your own research, is to be flexible and have an open mind, and don't read one thing and, oh, that's it. Believe it.
Exactly. And you might glean some really great things from one article, and there may be one or two things that are questionable or maybe contrary to something else you've read. And that just gives you a sign to dig deeper, to find more. More articles. And just like if you go to a doctor and he tells you something and you go for a second opinion and he tells you something different, it doesn't mean that one is right and one is wrong necessarily. It means in their experience and through their education, this is the conclusion they came to. And everybody's different. Everybody has different experiences and different educational backgrounds.
Well, and you're also experiencing the scientific method when you're doing your research and you find articles that contradict one another, and then you have to decide what seems the most logical, what in your experiences can you relate to either side. And then maybe there's a third source that that kind of clears things up a little bit. Maybe, you know, each of those conflicting articles, maybe there was some truth in both of them.
Right.
And then a third or fourth article kind of shines light on that and exposes it.
And I'll tell you, when I was doing my research for my dissertation in my doctoral studies, I really just loved to dig deeper, especially if I looked at a couple different sources and they were contradictory. I just found it intriguing how each of those people backed up their theories or didn't, and then how that led me to other folks. And a good bit of my research was in child development. And so it was just so exciting and interesting to me to read what one person said and then read another person who contradicted, but they gave pretty good argument as to why they contradicted them. And so it just made me want to know more and learn more. And I think the same is true for medicine. And when you're looking into the scientific parts of diagnosis and treatment, you really want to glean as much as you can from as many articles as you can.
That's definitely accurate and what I do. So another thing to consider is that if you're reading research and it's not necessarily up to date, or you think maybe there's more out there, there are other websites that can be really helpful. And some of those that we have found helpful through my cancer experience and through our health experiences are websites like the American Cancer Society, which is cancer.org, or the Mayo Clinic, John Hopkins, all of these large research-based organizations and hospitals have websites with lots of information. It's not just a blog post or somebody set up their own website or whatever. These are the same kind of scholars that you're finding on scholar.google.com, except it might be not peer reviewed, but they might release research earlier. And so it kind of gives you some of those new upcoming treatments or procedures or whatever it might be, and or new findings like uterine cancer is on the rise in young women while cervical cancer is, you know, declining. And so that kind of information comes from those big research institutions.
I was really thrilled when my dermatologist, I was diagnosed with, and we talked about this on another episode, lichus planus, an autoimmune condition. And he took out a piece of paper in my appointment and wrote down the name of a doctor who in North Carolina who specializes in that. And I thought, you know, that's a pretty cool thing. And he's a young doctor. I think that's a lot of it. He's well aware of different websites and experts. And he knows that it's easy just to type in her name. And then I can click on her website. And she has all of these patient resources that you can download and print out. You know, that would never have happened even maybe even 10 years ago. It's a great thing. And that kind of got me pointed in the right direction for that specific condition. And I learned a lot. I like the Cleveland Clinic website. I have a personal experience there. I had my heart surgery there. And I like the Mayo Clinic website as well. Those are reputable. Those are, you can bank on what they have to say. And it's a great first resource. But you know, the best thing is you just go, you just type anything in Google and all this stuff pops up.
And I think for the most part, the top searches are going to be those reputable sources. And so I would avoid sponsored posts that, you know, sponsored posts come up first. And so that's just somebody paid money for Google to put their post up first or their website up first. So if you scroll past the, I don't know, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 now, whatever it might be, scroll past those. It says sponsored on it really clearly. And then you'll find that it's sources like Mayo Clinic and cancer.org and NIH.gov that are going to pop up first.
Yeah. And it's so easy because the work's done for you. You just have to click on the link, but it's important to look at what link you're clicking on before you click on it. Just pass over the ones that aren't the reputable ones that we hear about.
I think it's also very important to be prepared for your doctor's appointments. And so if you can print stuff out, take notes, write down the source so the doctor knows that. But, you know, there's a certain way to go about talking to your doctor about it because we've all heard, don't Google it. Don't go on the, you know, that internet is not replacing my 20 years of college and medical school and
residency
and all of that.
Yeah, I think most doctors, and as you know from listening to this podcast, Alex and I have been to many, many doctors. And
many.
And you know, that's a good thing. We've had a lot of experience that kind of helps shape how we go into an appointment and are able to get the most out of it and feel the most assured that we're getting the best care. And I think it begins with a healthy respect of your doctor and what he or she has been through and how they got to where they are. And if you say, well, I'll just say what I've said. I've printed things out. I'm sure that I have the link down, the resource down, so they know where it came from. And I say, you know, I looked this up on such and such a website. I don't ever say I Googled it because that has a bad connotation, right or wrong. It just does. But I looked this up at such and such a website and I have some questions and I even will highlight things so that it's easy for the doctor to see specifically what I'm talking about. And I ask, would you have a minute to answer a couple questions about this specific thing. And no doctor has ever told me, no, I really just don't have the time right now. No doctor ever.
I don't even think I've had a doctor who, you know, did the whole appointment and didn't say, now, is there anything else you want to discuss?
Exactly.
You know, and it's nice to be prepared a little bit to have questions. You know, I, now that mom has coached me through all of these appointments, I often have a list on my phone of, you know, symptoms that I think may be related to whatever condition I'm talking to this doctor about, or questions about my next appointment or a follow-up exam or whatever it might be. I mean, even in my last gynecologic oncology appointment, I said, so when am I supposed to get a mammogram? Not really related to what was going on, but, you know, you would typically see a regular gynecologist and get your, you know, regular annual and mammogram all kind of with them. And so I was like, well, shoot my shot. Like, why not ask the question? And they were more than willing to answer.
You know, I even, every time I go to a doctor, I take a printout of my medications. I have them grouped as to what they are for. All my heart medications are in one grouping and all my diabetes medications are another. And then anything else that I might be taking for anything else. Mainly because I can pretty much remember what I'm taking, but I have trouble sometimes remembering the dosage. And so I can't tell you how many times the nurse taking those that information from me has said, thank you so much for bringing this in. Is it okay if I keep it? And, you know, I say, sure. And I just keep that on my computer. When any medication changes, I just update it. So all I have to do is press print when I'm ready to go to the doctor. And so it's not a bad thing to carry paperwork in with you, whether it's research or it's your medication list or it's the questions that you have for your doctor, because how frustrating is it? And I know this has happened to people because it's happened to me. When you leave and you go, oh, shoot, I meant to ask this, or, oh, I really needed to understand this better. And in the moment, you just have too many other things going on. And so it's important to check yourself and be prepared.
And especially when the condition is new to you or is rare or is not familiar to you. It's not a family thing. You know, like when I was diagnosed with HCM, I was like, okay, got it. like,
I don't think you were that excited.
I wasn't excited about it, but it was certainly like, oh yeah, I knew that one was coming. But like when I was diagnosed with, at the time, pseudotumor cerebri, which is now idiopathic intracranial hypertension, or IIH, it was brand new. Mm-hmm. I was a minor. So mom, now this was in 2002. Mm. So mom went back to our dial-up internet and just got on there and researched. And she came to the hospital the next day with like stacks of articles, like scholarly articles that she had found, and talked to the doctor about, talked to the surgeon about, talked to the neurologist about. And it's okay to bring that information with you. And even she would bring clinical notes from my other visits. And, you know, we've talked about that diagnosis before, but I saw several doctors over the course of a week who did several different tests for many different common things that they thought it might be. And mom had every single appointment, all the write-up from that appointment, the results, the what they did, all of that just in a folder, one of those big accordion folders, and carried it with her. It is now in my closet because...
Because you're a grown-up now.
I try to be. I'm a grown-up now. And if I ever have any issues with my brain stuff, I know that I can go and get my surgical notes from all of those surgeries. And so that is something that is really important too, is it's okay to take stuff with you, and it's really important. And, you know, most of our listeners are between the ages of 18 and 24, and 50% of our listeners are between 18 and 24. And I was you once. It is so important to be organized. I say that as I'm sitting in a really messy office right now, but it's so, so important to keep files, keep your bills all organized, keep all of your doctor's notes and things that happened in this prescription, and then it changed to this prescription. And if you have all of that together in one folder for each doctor or each condition or however you want to organize it, it makes life so much easier. So much easier. So,
well, and when you do that research and you take those printed out copies into your doctor's office, if the doctor doesn't want to keep them, you bring them home and you put them in the specific folder that correlates with that condition.
And you may have made notes on that.
Exactly.
You know, if the doctor was answering certain questions you had, or, you know, you could have scribbled down notes on that that are really important. So that's just a little bit into how we approach research or a new diagnosis or new symptom. And we hope that it helped you if you are going through anything wild or specific that you know need help with. And that it's okay to Google, but you just got to be a little bit careful about it. We appreciate you listening. If you would rate and subscribe and like and do all of those things on whatever platform you're listening to, we would greatly appreciate it. You can find all of our show notes on all of your platforms that you're listening to, as well as our blog post on our website, www.downthereaware.com. And on that website, you will find all of our social media contacts, which is just Down There Aware everywhere. And you can get you some Down There Aware merch. We have stickers and we have magnets, which help everybody be a little bit more Down There Aware. Thanks for listening.